Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 9th of March. A very good morning to you and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Wanjiro in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, South Africa's President Jacob Zuma is meeting his Nigerian counterpart in Abuja, and relations between the two economic powerhouses has been tense.
The biggest powers on the continent cannot be at each other's throat on account of the maybe particular economic interest. Economically, politically, both countries need one another.
UN investigators from the UN Human Rights Council end their one-week mission in Burundi. But was it successful?
Well, I think for a first visit, we got a good picture of what we're looking for. I think it's clear that a lot of work needs to be done and that there are many concerns that need to be addressed. But I think it was a good start.
And in Cameroon, motorcycles have been handed over to self-defense group in pursuit of getting rid of the Boko Haram insurgencies.
L'armée n'est pas partout.
The military cannot be everywhere, so we feel more secure when there are self-defense groups at work.
For these stories and more, stay tuned to Africa Link.
Top story.
We begin in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, where South Africa's President Jacob Zuma is on a two-day state visit. Observers see Zuma's visit as an attempt to mend fences between Africa's largest economic powers. The two countries were at odds with each other since Nigeria slammed South African mobile phone operator MTN with a hefty fine for failing to disconnect millions of unregistered subscribers. Sarah Stephan brings us more.
There were hopes that this visit would act like a soothing balm between the two countries. Relations between Nigeria and South Africa have not been good for some time, especially under Nigeria's previous president Goodluck Jonathan. It most certainly didn't help relations when Nigeria slapped the $3.9 billion fine, that's 3.5 billion euros, on a Johannesburg-based mobile phone operator last October. Nigeria had ordered all mobile phone operators to disconnect unregistered SIM cards, but South African mobile phone operator MTN missed the deadline. MTN helped Boko Haram by failing to disconnect more than 5 million of its unregistered users, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari said Tuesday at a joint press conference with his South African counterpart. It was the first time Buhari publicly commented on the case.
The unregistered GSM are being used by terrorists. And between 2009 and today, at least 10,000 Nigerians were killed by Boko Haram. At least 10,000. That was why NCC asked, MTN and GLO and the rest of them to register GSMs. Unfortunately, MTN was very, very slow and contributed to the casualty.
Buhari added MTN was in talks with Nigeria's communications regulator NCC to reduce the fine. The two heads of state were eager to stress the good business relations between the countries. South Africa's President Jacob Zuma brought along a sizable business delegation. So far, over 30 bilateral agreements and memoranda of understanding had been signed, Zuma said.
That we want to grow the relationship, I think, goes to the issue of indeed these two big economies in the continent, that in order to implement the inter-trade in the continent, these two countries should give leadership. And indeed, that is a commitment we have.
According to Buhari, Nigeria had a lot to gain from South Africa's expertise when it comes to certain business sectors.
We identified the role we can improve rapidly our relationship with South Africa in terms of economy, because we identified agriculture and solid minerals to come to fore quickly so that we can get the able-bodied unemployed employed. And South Africa here is far ahead of us in both agriculture and solid minerals. So in diversifying the economy, I think there is a great room for improvement and it is going to be exploited.
Zuma and Buhari have also called for closer ties in other business areas, from power and mining to banking and tourism.
Sarah Stephan compiled that report. To follow up on President Zuma's visit to Nigeria, I spoke to Tukur Abdulkadir, senior lecturer in political science at Kaduna State University, and first wanted to find out whether this MTN saga had influenced the economic relations between the two countries.
Probably they have decided to allow politics to really play the game instead of just concentrating on the economic interest. Initially, people thought that the matter was not going to be resolved amicably. But going by the resolve of the National Communications Commission and even the intervention now that is appearing on the part of the Senate, I think probably the whole matter is going to be addressed politically in view of the fact that both countries, they really need each other. The biggest powers on the continent cannot be at each other's throat on account of the maybe particular economic interest.
We also have the issue of electricity in Nigeria and South Africa. There's been electricity shortage. So how can South Africa and Nigeria work together to overcome these issues?
Well, I think since we now have a more committed patriotic leadership in place in the country, definitely the government will certainly benefit tremendously from the experience of the South African government. And most importantly, the government is now planning to move away the emphasis that, you know, we virtually rely on the monocultural nature of the Nigerian economy. There is now a plan to move away from there and pay more premium and emphasis on the issue of solid minerals. And we all know that South Africa is the leading player in the continent when it comes to the issue of solid minerals. This and the aspect of the power issue would certainly dominate the discussions. And I believe Nigeria, since we are trying, the government is now trying to see how the economy is going to be revived. Certainly, they need South Africa more than ever before.
We also see that there's a global fall in oil prices, which has slashed the government revenues severely, weakening the Naira currencies and driving up the cost of living. So how can South Africa help diversify Nigeria's economy away from the oil sector?
Well, I believe it is not likely that South Africa alone can play a central role in terms of reviving the economy of Nigeria. I do not think that the economy of South Africa is strong enough to develop our own. All that is needed for us really to have a synergy. You know, the South African economy, based on what some experts on the economy in Africa are saying, is that we are even more open than the South African market. So they need to open up their own so that our own industrialists, and especially in the construction sector and maybe telecommunications, they also will have to make the necessary inroads. We have our own, the likes of Etisalat, the likes of Dangote Group, and other promising and upcoming companies. They also need to be given the space to operate freely in South Africa. But I don't think South Africa alone can do the magic.
So what about intra-African trade? How are the two countries helping stimulate this?
Unfortunately, since even in South Africa, they have their own challenges. Since the majority of the people, even in South Africa, live in abject poverty, and that is an area that the African National Congress and the leadership of South Africa, they are really yet to address. So I think unless there is credible leadership and the issue of corruption surrounding the reign of Jacob Zuma is addressed, I don't see them playing any significant role in the continent. Nigeria, on the other hand, especially in the West African sub-region, in spite of our challenges, you know, we are still the leading power, and if not because of the insurgency in the northeast, the Nigeria still dominates the market, even in some part of Central Africa and Gabon.
Okay, so you're talking about the insurgency. We know that there is also the problem of the Boko Haram. And how is South Africa helping Nigeria fight Boko Haram?
Well, I think we will benefit a lot, especially when it comes to the issue of armaments. Since we rely virtually on foreign markets to get our arms, and South Africa, I don't think, maybe apart from Egypt, there is no any other country in the continent that can compete with South Africa in terms of this arms manufacturing. So Nigeria stands to gain a lot, especially now that the leadership is determined to really fight the insurgency. They are now actually making serious gains in virtually all parts of the northeast, and the terrorists are on the retreat.
Tukur Abdulkadir, a senior lecturer in political science at Kaduna State University.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Investigators from the UN Human Rights Council have finished their one-week mission to look into allegations of human rights abuses in Burundi. The three UN experts are expected to publish their findings on March 21st. I spoke to Christoph Heinz, one of those experts, and first wanted to find out whether things had become clearer for them during their visit.
Yes. So, as you know, this is the first phase of a longer process, so we'll come back again in June and afterwards. But we had good access to government officials, to the police, to the security, to the prisons, and also to victims and civil society. And yes, I think we were able to get a good picture of where we are and perhaps some of the vague directions in which things should be going.
So you say that you had good interaction with the government. How cooperative was the government and other Burundians that you spoke to?
Yeah, I think the access was good. I don't think they've previously from the public security sector and from even the intelligence services and also from the Defence Force and the police have engaged with the United Nations on this level before. So I think the access was good. And then, of course, it differs. Some officials are more open than others. But in some cases, there were officials whom we thought were open to looking at how to improve matters.
So are you at the moment already giving recommendations for the government?
No. We've amongst ourselves started to formulate some recommendations. And generally, of course, the issue of inclusive dialogue and the security situation that's conducive to inclusive dialogue and accountability, those are things that we emphasize, but those are very general terms. We will be starting to work on more concrete recommendations now.
Okay, so what are the next steps? So what is the next stage?
So on the 21st of March, one of us, we were three here, so one of us will report to the Human Rights Council. And then the idea is to come back in June again for a visit and also in the meantime to place 9 observers on the ground in Bujumbura.
Okay, you said that this, well, would be the first of several investigative missions to Burundi, and you're also talking about going back again. Are you satisfied with your findings?
Well, I think for a first visit, we got a good picture of what we're looking for. I think it's clear that a lot of work needs to be done and that there are many concerns that need to be addressed, but I think it was a good start.
That was Christoph Heinz, the UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial, Summary or Arbitrary Executions.
Behind the headlines.
Cameroon has been handing over motorcycles and bicycles to self-defense groups to monitor its porous northern border with Nigeria as the terrorist group Boko Haram resorts to the planting of landmines. DW's Moki Kinzeka went to find out how much motorcycles can help in the fight against Boko Haram terrorism. He sent us this report from Yaounde.
In this song, the vigilantes, armed with machetes and knives, vow to protect their towns and villages from Boko Haram insurgents. About 50 young men have now received motorcycles and bicycles, which will facilitate their security work. They have to detect and counter any insurgency. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon that borders Nigeria, says the vigilantes have to play an important role.
After a long period of time spent encouraging people to contribute to the fight against Boko Haram, the inhabitants of villages bordering on Nigeria have been joining self-defense groups in large numbers. I am asking all of them to be vigilant every time they use the motorcycles and bicycles to go and track down unwanted visitors. Those members of self-defense groups who have died while protecting Cameroon did not lay down their lives in vain, and their country will always remember and honor them.
The government has made an extra step by handing over some motorcycles and bicycles to vigilantes. Fon Godlove is one of 50 recipients. The primary school teacher and his colleagues joined a vigilante group in Kolofata, and they are aware of the task put on them.
Whether the road is bad or good, I am able to go with the motorcycle. It can take me to anywhere. For example, on tart road, hilly places, valleys, desert. The motorcycle will be able to take me to where I want.
Among the hundreds of people who have gathered to watch the ceremony and congratulate the members of the vigilante group is Dr. Awa Sajo, who lost several members of her family to Boko Haram militants. She understands why the youth has to be armed.
L'armée n'est pas partout.
The military cannot be everywhere, so we feel more secure when there are self-defense groups at work. So now that they have been given motorcycles and weapons to facilitate their work, I feel happy. I will only be worried if they start asking for salaries, because at that time it will be difficult to contain them.
About 34 people, including 11 soldiers, were recently killed in 7 landmine attacks. 40 more people were injured. The leader for vigilance groups, Hamadiku Falama, says many more casualties should have been reported had it not been their efforts to counter the terrorist group from operating in Cameroon.
Last week, we detected 3 strange teenagers in their town, and when some of our members went to search them, the strangers refused to collaborate. After using force, we discovered that the strangers had explosive devices they were planning to install on our roads. One of them, unfortunately, escaped.
Un pas en avant, et l'autre est retourné.
Boko Haram has killed more than 20,000, according to the United Nations. The militants have reportedly displaced hundreds of thousands.
Moki Kinzeka reporting from Yaounde.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.com/Africa Link Podcast.
A Kenyan teacher is among this year's U.S. Global Teacher Prize top 10 finalists. He is the only African in the competition that is still in the race to win the $1 million award. Ayub Mohammed, who is a business and religious teacher at Eastleigh High School in Nairobi, has been teaching his students to say no to violence, extremism and radicalization. Our correspondent from Kenya, Andrew Wasike, met up with Mohammed and brings us this report.
The Eastleigh neighborhood of Nairobi is also known as Little Mogadishu. It is predominantly inhabited by ethnic Somalis, and Kenyan authorities have identified it as one of the main recruiting grounds for Islamist militant groups operating in the Horn of Africa. Ayub Mohammed, a teacher at Eastleigh High School, has been nominated for the U.S. Global Teacher Prize from the non-profit Vaki Foundation. In recognition of his outstanding efforts of working with youths and teaching them to resist violent extremism, his own background is quite humble.
I'm born in Wajir in northern Kenya. And northern Kenya is a place that is underdeveloped compared to other parts of the country. I taught in Wajir, I also taught in Garissa. And when you look at the schools there are very, very few teachers. Then the infrastructure in terms of the school facilities, it is really wanting.
In 2014, over 650 youths were arrested in Eastleigh area after a grenade was hurled into a food cafeteria, killing 6 people and injuring more than 30 others. Islamic scholars and religious teachers from the area have been charged in court with radicalizing the youth and facilitating their trips to Somalia to be recruited by Al-Shabaab. Mohammed told DW of the role he chose to play as a teacher to tackle the issue of radicalization and violent extremism in his community.
As a teacher, I realized that I should also take part. I should also be part of the solution in the school, where I try to use the school and the classroom as a safe space and the teacher as the role model. So I've been trying to engage these students on bringing about a mindset change.
Mohammed says that as an Islamic religious teacher, what he teaches in class plays a major role in the upbringing of a Muslim student and will greatly influence how they act in future.
So I try to teach these students about the ideologies and the propaganda used by these violent extremist groups and tell them the correct teachings of Islam vis-a-vis the propaganda and the evil ideologies that are used by these extremist groups to recruit. And then I also teach these students about tolerance and how they can live and coexist with other people from other backgrounds and from other faiths and from other cultures.
Mohammed noted that most of his students are able to challenge radicalization and violent extremism not only from the school level, but also at the community level, where they play a major part as peace champions. Many Kenyan youths are also lured to join Al-Shabaab to earn money due to lack of job opportunities in Kenya. The youths who have been taught by Mohammed have learned skills on how to become entrepreneurs. Mohammed has also started a project whereby youths collect plastic waste from the community and turn them into roofing tiles. Ayub Mohammed, who has been a speaker at the Global Counterterrorism Forum in Abu Dhabi, says that if he wins the $1 million prize, he wants to use it to help poorer Kenyans.
Given the prize, I intend to set up a scholarship kitty where students who are bright and needy, they can be able to benefit. They can be able to learn, go to college, go to school, and then give back to society.
Andrew Wasiki compiled that report.
Opinion.
In opinion this week, South Africa's President Jacob Zuma is on a two-day state visit to Nigeria. Do you think this visit will strengthen economic ties and improve relations between the two countries? We have also been reporting on how Cameroon has been handing over motorcycles and bicycles to vigilante groups to watch over areas stricken by the Boko Haram insurgency. What do you think about this move? Let us know your thoughts in a text message to country code 49160-957-59510, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/Africa Link. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter, dw.com/Africa Link.
And now a reminder of our main stories. South Africa's President Jacob Zuma is in Abuja, Nigeria, to talk to his Nigerian counterpart Muhammadu Buhari, who will be winding up a two-day state visit to the country today. UN investigators from the UN Human Rights Council have returned from their one-week mission in Burundi. And in Cameroon, motorcycles have been handed over to self-defense group in pursuit of getting rid of the Boko Haram insurgencies and protecting their communities. You can also find out more stories from and about Africa on our page. Go to dw.com/Africa. And here's a quick reminder of how you can get in touch with us. Send an SMS to country code 49160-957-59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Do join my colleague Crispin Mokideo same time tomorrow. And until the next time, this is Eunice Wanjiro in Bonn, Germany. Bye now. We'll be right back.